So now he will tell us what is, again, as we said, all of us are very result oriented. What will I get out of it? You say, Bhagwan, do actions dedicated to me. All your actions should be done for purification of mind. But what will happen? What will I get? See, everybody wants to know what is in it for me. So Bhagwan knows our thinking. So he answers it very beautifully in verse number 12. Yukta karma phalam tyaktva shantim apnoti naishthiki ayukta kama karena phale sakto nibadhyate. Together, yukta karma phalam tyaktva shantim apnoti naishthikim ayukta kama karena phale sakto nipadhyate. So here the Lord is telling us about, throughout the Bhagavad Gita, he does that very clearly. What is yukta and what is ayukta? So, what is yukta? One, we will talk about that. And what is ayukta? So, he is giving us a contrast to see where do I stand. Am I yukta or am I yukta? Ayukta. So, he says yukta is one whose mind is always with the higher. So, yukta has two meanings. We'll talk about it. So, yukta karma phalam tyaktva, giving up the fruit of action. What is giving up the fruit? We'll talk about that. Tyaktva, giving up. Shantim apnoti, he reaches peace. Naishtikim, real shanti, permanent shanti. One is a temporary shanti, one is a permanent shanti. Shantim apnoti naishtikim, permanent peace he attains. Why? Who? A person who is yukta. But one who is ayukta, who is not yukta, how does he or she function? Kama karena, with desire, wanting particular thing. So selfish, kama is selfish desire. And phale sakto, and he is bound to the result. He wants a particular result and only that. And then when such a person works, he is bound, he is caught. So what is the difference between ayukta and yukta? So yukta, as we had said last week also, if you remember, yukta has two meanings. One is yukta means united to the Lord. So one who is always united to the Lord. The other meaning of yukta is mind and intellect work together. Intellect has the right knowledge and mind listens to the intellect. So that is called yukta. And ayukta is one whose mind is not under his control. You know, does whatever the mind, whatever feels like. Even though I know this is right, mind says, forget it. You can keep your book knowledge. I'm going to do what I want to do. And so the body follows. Body follows instruction. And the intellect keeps saying, don't do this, don't do this. Forget it. It's okay. Books are meant for studying. Sunday class is okay. You know, Bhagavad Gita. But in life, it doesn't work like that. So that is ayukta. So the journey from yukta, from ayukta to yukta, who is not united to united, is not going to happen overnight. That's why repeated listening, thinking about it, because every time I study the Bhagavad Gita, I get so much more out of it. And I think all these points, you know, we didn't even know before. Every time you read, every time you listen, every time we have these teachers coming and you listen, you always pick up new points. So it's a very gradual process. So it's not going to happen overnight. It's not meant to discourage. It's meant to encourage us that the fact that you are here and sitting and we are listening and talking, we are already on the right path. So the journey is there and it's not too far. See, manzil dur nahi hai. The fact that we have this book and we are listening. What happens in our case when we are not united, when our mind and intellect is not united, when we are ayukta, we get anxiety. Anxiety, why? Because I want this. I don't know whether I'll get it or not. See, true tragedies don't come that often. You know, a major tragedy where there was a major illness or a loss of job or something really bad happened. Most of the time is these small, small anxieties. I don't know whether I'll get it. I don't know whether it will happen. I don't know if my son will get admission. You know, all this we read about how people were cheating and bribing. And now all of them are going to end up in jail, you know, who wanted to get their children into good schools and they paid money. So the point is that this anxiety of whether I will get or not, whether it will work or not, so it is that which is a problem. And when selfish activities are done, then a person is already bound. When he says nibbadhyate, badhyate means bound, nibbadhyate means completely bound. So a person who is doing selfish actions just for gratification of the mind is already bound. There is nothing for him to get bound. We are already bound. The idea is to get free. Actually, the Mahatma say you are already free. You are Brahman. You are that consciousness. You think you are bound. Why? Because of attachments to things and beings. So that is why we have got ourselves caught. In fact, we are free. All we have to do is understand that we are free. And then Shantim Apnoti, one who does actions attached to the higher, reaches peace. Now, we have temporary peace. You know, like, okay, today we are going out to eat, so I don't have to cook. Ah, that is peace. You know, that is nice. Or some, you know, I bought a new car. I wanted a car. Car. When I got. So that peace is temporary. But then again, next morning I have to cook. So that peace is not permanent, you know. But what they are talking about is permanent peace, and that peace can only be found within, and that is always with us. And what has to be controlled is the indriyas and the mind. The mind and the sense organs. Indriyani pramathini harati prasabham manaha. In the second chapter it is said that these sense organs are so powerful, they take away our mind, we're out into the world and away from the self. We are sitting for puja or meditation and then thought comes. You know, yesterday he said this. And then, you know, 5 years ago, that guy had borrowed 50 rupees from me. You know, all these thoughts keep coming. So the problem is, see, a person who is 0%, who has no spiritual idea, he is totally ayukta, he doesn't care. For him, there's no regrets, right? He says, I did the wrong thing. I didn't do anything wrong. Or a person who is 100%, who is a realized master, for him, there is no problem because he never does everything wrong because he's always attached with the higher. The problem is for people like us who are 50%, we know a little bit, but we have still not reached that 100%. So for us, there is always regret. You know, I shouldn't have done that. Why did I, that time under the influence of my mind, I got angry and I said that. For a person who has never even read Gita, has no idea. He said, I got angry. So what? It was meant to be angry. But for people like us, it said, you know, you should not have anger. You should not have greed, kam, krodh, mad, moh, lobh, matsarya, don't. So it is for people like us, the problem arises. The problem is for us. For a person who doesn't know, there is no problem. And for a person like Gurudev, there is no problem because they don't do anything wrong because their mind is always connected with the higher and there is no doership in them. They are absolutely, the Brahman is working. You can see God sitting there when you sit with these. So then a person may ask, it's a very important point, which is towards the end, but it's very important. Bhagavan says, yukta karma phalam tyaktva shantim apnoti naishtakim. He says, give up the fruit of actions and you will get shanti. So, wow, why didn't you tell me that earlier? Then I wouldn't have come to this Gita class, you know, and I wouldn't be sitting and studying. If I can just do actions without fruit, that is simple. I'll go out in the world and people actually come and say, you know what? I believe as long as you do your work honestly and don't hurt anybody, that's all you need. You don't need to go to this Gita class and you don't need to study all these scriptures. You're wasting your time. Just live a good life. Don't harm anybody. That's good. I'm not saying that that is bad. But that is just a beginner. One who lives, works, and that's good. Works does his job honestly, not harming anybody, that's very good. But he's still doing karma. From karma, you have to go to karma yoga, where instead of just working, doing my duty for myself, I start doing for others. One is not harming anybody, that's passive, but actively helping others. So that is a step beyond that. Just say, I don't harm anybody is good, but do you actively go and help others? So that is becomes karma yoga. And that is called sattva shuddhi. So that is only the first step. Don't think just by doing karma yoga, I will reach shanti mapnoti naishtikim. Bhagavan is telling us that by starting on this path, you will reach the permanent shanti, where you find shanti within, which is a never-ending, real, permanent shanti. But there are five steps. It's not just karma yoga. So the first one is sattva shuddhi. This is very, very important. Then, sattva shuddhi ke baad gyan prapti. Then I should get knowledge. So I purify the mind. It does not mean that you... It's like sequence. As the purer your mind, the clearer becomes the knowledge. So gyan prapti. You get knowledge. Then, sarva karma sannyasa. Sannyas here means not only putting on orange clothes and leaving the world, but giving up the doership. The agency that I am doing anything. So there is no doership. When there is no doership, there is no enjoyership. There is no karta, there is no bhokta. So if I do something, then I have to enjoy the results or suffer the consequences. But if I am not the doer, God is working through me, then I don't suffer the consequences. So sarva karma sannyasa, that is called giving up agency, the doership. Then the fourth step is jnana nishtha, complete abidance in that knowledge. Even in the middle of the night, you wake him up and say, who are you? What is your name? He will say, I am Brahman. I won't say I am Anil or Satish or Barbara or Pragati, but I am Brahman. I mean, for Vyavaharik, he will answer what is his name. Obviously, he is not going to say, I am Brahman when he goes to the passport office. And he says, what is your name? He's not going to say, my name is Brahman. To get a passport, he'll need his worldly name. But inside he knows, even if in the middle of the night, if you wake him up and say who you are, he'll say, I'm Brahman, but for your benefit, I'm giving the name. That is called Jnana Nishtha. And then Naishtikim Shanti. So there are five steps. First, do the Karma Yoga, purify your mind, get the knowledge, then give up the doership, and then complete abidance in that knowledge. And that can only happen by repeated listening. That's why again and again, it's you might say, oh, this we have already heard so many times. But the more you listen, the more the clarity comes, the more the depth comes, the more the groove in your mind changes. And then alone, shanti naishtikim. So even though Bhagavan is saying it in one line, but what he means is there are five steps to this knowledge. And ultimately, complete abidance in that shanti within. That is the shanti of the realized master. How the realized master functions in the world. Where he has all five. He has karma yoga. He has the knowledge. He has given up the doership. Complete abidance. And then alone. So this is... Today's verses talk about how to work unselfishly and then what is the benefit of this knowledge and how to go from ignorance to knowledge. Next few verses are very beautiful, talk about the man of wisdom and what God does. You know, we all want to know what God does. Well, we'll be talking about that in the next 8 or 9 verses. Very, very powerful verses, very power-packed. We have about 10 or 12 minutes. Anybody has any questions, comments?
At the end of the 11th verse in the translation portion, the last word self with a capital S, there's also in parenthesis ego. Yogis, having abandoned attachment, perform actions merely by the body, mind, intellect, and senses for the purification of the self. Self being capital S, but then the ego.
Right. That's a good question. As I said, Atma in this verse refers to the body. To the body, mind and intellect. Because the Atma, the self, does not need purification. The capital S does not need purification. It is the ego that needs purification. When Bhagwan is saying Atma Shuddhaye, what he means is the purification of the body, mind and intellect, the perceiver, feeler and thinker. So my action should be pure, my emotion should be pure, my thought should be pure. So when he says, because I at this moment, I think I am this body, mind and intellect. So when Bhagwan uses the word Atma or Self, he's talking about the little individuality, Sharad, not the Self. So that individuality needs purification, but not the total Self, the consciousness. So that's why he uses in brackets, I actually didn't notice that point. Thank you for pointing it out. But what they mean is, it's the Self, the ego that needs purification, not the total Self. That is ever pure. Yeah, thank you. That's a good point. Yeah.
I have a question on something you previously said.
Sure.
The five elements and mind is like ego. And I know that all thoughts that mind creates, they persist in the, I guess, world in general. And that's why we see, good thought created action like temple and hospital and stuff, and then other thing.
Right.
So why the ego is included in that?
Because ego, everybody has ego. So that is part of the, even the plant has an ego. You know, plant also knows I have to grow towards sunlight. Even a little mosquito has an ego. When you try to chase it, it runs away. So we all have this ego, this I. This ego means this idea of I. I am this limited entity. With the whole universe is made of that. Without ego, then no activity will happen. So so these eight elements make the universe. Everybody has ego. I mean, of course, the chair doesn't have an ego, doesn't have a mind or intellect, but all living beings, the chair only has, air, space, fire, water, earth. Doesn't have mind, intellect, or ego, but the living beings have these three. Have an emotions, have the intellect, and then have this perceiver, feeler, and thinker. This is the ego, that I am the perceiver, feeler, and thinker, which even a plant is perceiving. That's why they say plants that are kept in soothing music grow better, and if they are kept in harsh music, they don't grow. So they also have the ability to perceive, feel, and think. Even a dog or everybody has, ant, even when they know you're the danger, they run away to protect themselves. So I don't know. Is that answer your question?
Yeah,
go ahead.
The ego is a very strange thing. That body that perceives thinks I am the perceiver. The feeler, I am the feeler. What makes it worse is because then it starts thinking what I perceive is correct, but other is perceiving is not correct. And then I think what I'm feeling is right, but the other person is feeling is not right. Those discriminations between different people and different thinking, the ego then clashes with each other. And that ego has to be eliminated to see the oneness. So there is nothing good or bad. The ego, the person who says good and bad is the ego who says that. This is a good word, this is a bad word. If you go to see, surgeon cutting a body is using knife, and the murderer using knife. But it's a person with surgeon's mind doing things in a different way. So the ego is the one which changes the attitude and action in the world. And so we need to eliminate the ego so we don't see things that, I don't know, it's a little difficult to understand. But that perceiver, feeler, thinker,
right.
I think I'm right, feeler thinks my feelings are correct, the other person's feelings are not good. The thoughts, my ideas are better than other person's ideas. This is ego needs to be eliminated.
Right. Thank you. That's good. But actually, if you look at this chart, everything below Om is in that Ashtamurti, is eight. The body, mind, the eight, five elements, the mind and intellect, and the perceiver, feeler, and thinker. And the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts come in the five elements. The five elements make the objects, emotions, thoughts. The perceiver, feeler, thinker is the ego. The body is the five elements, and the mind and intellect. And the vasanas are the tendencies which strengthen. So everything is that, those eight. But that's how it, in our Ashtamurti. Is that clear? Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
I have a question that I've been thinking about, and it kind of goes along with this. I was wondering when we, having 8.4 million births, when we start accumulating vasanas. And as you know, as you were talking about, you know, it didn't occur to me that even a plant or a protozoa has an instinct or an intellect.
Mm-hmm.
But how can that be a vasana? Because you know, they're not choosing that. Are there? Right, I guess they're choosing it. Like if plant grows toward light, you know. So how? And so that's basically my confusion.
Right. Well, I think basically what the creator did, created this variety, you know, where a plant is required for us to eat, for us to survive. So this whole infinite variety was created, and there are beings who are on different levels of evolution. There is a plant, then there is a protozoa. But the fact that we took birth, we have to have vasanas. And depending on my vasanas, depending on my karmas, depending on my desires, I take different births. Like this life, I'm born a human being. But if my actions are impure and if I'm very selfish and I'm very, you know, malicious, next life I could be born as a dog or a buffalo or an elephant. And if my actions are pure, then in my next life I'll be born as a yogi or maybe born in the family of yogis in the sixth chapter, Bhagavan Sri Krishna says. So, vasanas are the cause of birth. All of us have unfulfilled vasanas and unexhausted karmas. Because of that, I took birth. So, the way to get beyond the cycle of birth and death is to exhaust all vasanas and reduce selfish karmas, do more and more unselfish karmas without any expectation of result. It is the expectation of result and unfulfilled karmas that give us the need to take another birth. But if I have minimum vasanas and minimum karmas, then such a person will not be born again or will be evolving in their level of creation. So vasanas we all have. But the creation is done for variety, and there is an evolution, just as Darwin's theory of evolution, first we were a plant and then we became. Same thing Vedanta says, that these are all less evolved beings and they are all growing on the path of spirituality. So that's why you respect everything as Brahman, everything, even every plant, even your shoes or your chair, everything should be respected because everything is Brahman. But they are all on the path of growth. And so we have come to this level, let us keep growing upwards, let us not go backwards. That is the idea. Thank you. Good questions. Everybody is asking tough ones. I am having a hard time. Thank you so much. It's so nice that people are, you know, participating. It's good. And thank you, Hansa, for your comments. Anything else? Anybody else? We have still a few minutes.
Anandji, I have a question.
Sure.
In continuation to what Sujata Bibi asked and then I think what has been going on, when we say, I am the Brahman, or I am observing, or I am watching Madhu listen, so who is this I? Am I not again attached with myself? Am I not holding myself there? I am there?
No, that is a good question. It is the intellect. The discriminative capacity in me watches the mind and body working. So this mind and body is working, but there is this knowledge, this observer, which is the part of the intellect, which is the intellect which has the wisdom. So that is still at the level of observer. So the intellect, you can say, part of the intellect is observing the intellect, the mind, the body. So part of my mind is watching the mind, but it is still at the level of duality. But it is better than not even thinking, you know, just mechanically doing, being an observer, you're slowly detaching from the body, mind and intellect to something higher, the observer, the watcher, which ultimately is the consciousness, which is nourishing that. So I'm coming closer to that consciousness by being an observer. So constantly observe yourself. And then ultimately there is something in me that is even illumining the observer. that is even giving life to that observer. So that consciousness I am. But there is a step between that consciousness I am and this body, mind and intellect I am. There is a step called observer, which is somewhere in between. The observer is watching the body, mind. It's still me. But it is me, the observer, or whether it's me, the BMI. That is the first step. You know, I am the BMI. Then you say, I am the observer. I am watching the BMI. Ultimately, I am the consciousness and there is nothing except me. There is nothing to watch. At the level of the Brahman, then there is nobody watching nobody because there is one. Like you cannot say my hand is my, you know, my hand is or my leg. They are all me. I do not see any difference between my hand and my leg. You don't say my right hand is better than my left hand or my right leg. I love every part of me equally because there is no two. Every part of you is Madhu. You know, whether it's the ear, whether it's the nose, whether it's the hand. So when I see everything as Brahman, then there is nobody to observe nobody. So that is the highest level. That is called Paramartha Drishti or the absolute standpoint. But at the relative standpoint, I am observing Madhu working. So I am slowly detaching from Madhu and becoming the observer. And the more you listen to this, and especially if you start meditating regularly, what will happen is that automatically a part of you will be watching. And it's kind of strange, but the moment I become aware of that, lot of times when activities are going on, when I'm talking to people, you become aware that there is somebody who is watching this conversation going on. That there is somebody who is, even when I'm talking to somebody or when I'm sitting in Govindji's chair, you know, I can say I'm getting treated or I'm watching the person getting, you know, being treated by the dentist. So slowly it happens with practice. Of course, to reach that state of Brahman is Brahmanhood is long, but at least to be the observer is a step in the right direction. So occasionally I feel that when I'm able to. I think with regular meditation, because in meditation we do that. We separate ourselves from our thoughts, from our body, from our mind, from our... So you detach yourself and you say, I am, you know, mano buddha hankar chittami naham, you know, chittani naham in the Nirvana Shatkam, Bhagavan Shankaracharya just says, man, I am not, buddhi, I am not, ahankar, I am not the body, I am not the mind, I am not the intellect, I am not the ego, I am not the feeler, I am not the thinker, I am not the perceiver, chidananda rupaha shivoham shivoham. I am that Shiva, that pure consciousness of the nature of consciousness, bliss. So mantras like this help to take you. And that's why reading Nirvana Shatkam, if you have not read it, you should read and memorize that. You know, those six verses are very powerful by Shankaracharya. You can Google them and then read the meaning and then memorize them. And that you can use in meditation where he says, I am not the experiencer. I am not even the... I'm not even the desires, I am not even the desirer, I am not even father, I am not even the mother, I am not even the son, I am not even the guru, I am not even the scriptures. But I am beyond all of them. So Nirvana Shatkam, if those of you have not read, please read it and memorize it. And definitely, those six verses are most powerful, simple, but the entire essence of Vedanta is given in that. So in meditation, you practice that I am not this body, mind, intellect. It's by Shankaracharya ji, six verses, beautiful, beautiful verses. Should be memorized, everybody should memorize them. Chidananda rupaha shivoham shivoham. I am of the nature of consciousness and Shiva. Nirvana, of course, means, you know, enlightenment. So it's six verses which will take you to enlightenment. I think I had heard Swami Ishwarananji one time give discourses on Nirvana Shatkam. I'm sure you can Google discourses on Nirvana Shatkam by these Swamijis or by YouTube. So listen to some discourses, not only just the translation, but discourses by some Mahatma on them. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukkha Bhavet. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo. Hari Om.